are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Can let the people see behind the curtain and see the kind of ridiculous things that we talk about on Facebook.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You know, it's the beauty of Friends with Fantasy Benefits. It's, we're a little bit more raw here, and I think that there is some charm in it.
I'm good for that, for sure.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You need raw writing and raw opinion. I'm good for that.
You definitely are, sir.
And then he laid big thuds after big thuds after big thuds, and now all of a sudden he's good.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. I'm looking forward to this episode because we've had a very very active week in the staff chat, and I have a feeling it might spill over, which is all good.
That is actually one of the reasons why half of the names on this list are on this list, because these are virtually all guys, except for maybe a couple different exceptions, that we've been kind of either arguing over or discussing in our staff chat, and I thought it would lend for an interesting on-air discussion, and so that's why we're going to talk about a number of these names. Darius, how are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It was certainly been very interesting so far in the old Facebook chat. It actually inspired me to write about it a little bit yesterday, because people were saying some crazy things. So yeah, I think it'll be some good talking points, and we can let the people see behind the curtain and see the kind of ridiculous things that we talk about on Facebook.
And definitely go out and check that out, Darius's article out on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, and Chuck's weekly article, which has been great rants left and right, as Chuck is prone to do.
Can we change the name to Great Rants?
someone has mentioned that perhaps my writing sounds a little bit like my vocalizing, and so sounds like you're confirming that, which is, I understand.
You know, we all have our own voice. We develop it, and some people do it a little bit differently than others, and that's totally fine. And it's the beauty of Friends of Fantasy Benefits, as opposed to maybe some other places that you read and we write, some of us write for, including myself and Darius, is we're a little bit more raw here. And I think that there is some charm in that.
Well, I'm good for that, for sure. You need raw writing and raw opinion. I'm good for that.
You definitely are, sir. All right, let's jump into our first discussion, and that's Rougned Odor. Not a guy I don't think that we've really discussed in our staff chat, but an interesting guy nonetheless. He has started off the year extremely slowly, especially in the batting average department, really kind of to a detriment of teams. But he's gotten pretty hot as of late. So, Darius, are you starting to believe this is the beginning of a turnaround for Rougned Odor?
Yeah, I think so. I couldn't really see any change for him overall in terms of his discipline. He's obviously not a guy who walks very much, but he wasn't really changing too much in terms of how often he was making contact. It was down a little bit, but the problem was more that he was popping up so much. His infield flyball rate is nearly 25%, which is insane. And so I think it was just a case of maybe his timing was a tiny bit off, and instead of barreling those balls up, he was just popping them up into the air, and they're obviously automatic outs. So I think that started to come around lately. He's had four homers over the last 10 games or so, including a couple last night. And it sounds like the team is a lot happier with where he's at now. So I think maybe he's just fixed a minor timing issue, and he's now getting the bat on the ball. So I think this is the time, if you can get hold of Odor, or if you were kind of giving up on him, maybe just slot him back into your lineup, because I think we'll hopefully see more like the 2015 version going forward.
Chuck, do you agree with Darius?
I generally do. The only thing I did, the only thing that I looked at a little bit differently is I saw those infield fly balls, and I wonder if somebody got a bug in his ear about trying to hit more fly balls, and maybe that turned into infield fly balls. instead of the more powerful fly balls to the outfield he was probably hoping for. You know, my overall take on this guy is that you did not draft him thinking he was going to carry your batting average. I mean, you had to look into him enough to know that his plate discipline was not good to begin with. So if he gets to 25 home runs at second base, which my guts still tell me that he's going to, I think he is still going to turn out to be a relatively decent draft value. He at least is not going to sink you in those categories. He runs a little bit. He's not really a steals guy. But at the same time, he's in the middle of a good lineup that usually heats up when the summertime heats up. So to me, I like him a lot here going forward. The places that I own him, I've held tight and figured it was going to come around, because when I look at him, when I see the eye test, it's a lot like Jose Bautista. There was a lot of people blowing off alarms about Odor, you know, a couple weeks ago. And every time I watched him play, I still thought, boy, he looks a lot like he used to me. So I don't see any big differences. So I'm going to stay the course with him.
Yeah, I think I agree with you guys completely, especially Darius and the infield fly ball percentage that has been absolutely insane this year. And it's something I know I mentioned on an earlier podcast. I'm sure if you guys were on that one, you probably agreed with me that that was kind of just an anomaly and things were going to turn around. But to Chuck's point, I mean, you didn't draft Odor to be a batting average asset. You drafted him for power and him to chip in some double-digit stolen bases. He's going to do that. He's probably going to finish with 28, 29 home runs. And, you know, he's actually on pace for a few more stolen bases this year. So if he finishes with 16, 17 stolen bases, I think you're going to be pretty happy with the overall production. So I wouldn't worry about Odor, and I'm actually actively trying to buy him in two leagues. So let's go ahead and move on and talk about Rossy Iglesias. Iglesias was one of those guys that some people were really, really high on coming into the year. Some people were kind of staying away. And it started off the year in the Reds' bullpen as kind of a closer by committee. You know, he was getting these two-out multi-inning saves, not two-out saves. And, you know, and the other guys were sometimes chipping in and getting saves, but he has turned into the clear guy there in recent time. And he is pretty much been one of the best closers in all of fantasy baseball. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Rossy Iglesias?
Well, what I did with Iglesias is I went and looked, and I saw that he's under contract through 2020. And he's never at a cost of greater than $5 million in any of those seasons. So he's an absolutely phenomenal value. These kind of values don't usually get traded. It's just, you know, I remember the Glenn Perkins deal from a few years ago when he was lighting it up, and everyone thought he was going to get traded, and he didn't. But it's so team-friendly that it's hard to get actual value back for him. But the biggest thing I want to mention about Iglesias, and you're more than welcome to roll your eyes because I'm going to bring in sort of a Brewers analogy, since the Brewers and the Reds are sort of in the same spot as far as rebuilding. That's that he's got 27 appearances right now, and that's versus the mid to upper 30s for a lot of the Brewers, because Craig Counsell likes to use the same three relievers every single game. But my point being is that I'm wondering, the lack of a starting rotation in front of Iglesias, to me, means that all the people between the starters and Iglesias are getting beat to the living bejesus belts. Literally, like, they're literally throwing themselves to death. Like, two or three of them may not have a major league career by season's end because their longest and best pitcher might make it through the sixth inning every once in a while. And that's only on occasion. So to me, the setting is going to hurt Iglesias, who really looks absolutely wonderful. I mean, his ground balls are way up, 48.5% now. His line drives are down 4%, the line drives that he allows, to 17.6%. I don't like the setting that he's in at all. And I think that this is a rare occasion where the team itself is going to hurt Iglesias in the long term. The only reason he's not getting overused is because he has earned that closer moniker, which is good for him. But I don't think it's good for the rest of that bullpen. I mean, Tim Adelman's a guy I picked up in recent weeks, and he's really done me well. But again, that's a six-inning guy at most, and that's their whole rotation. So that's where I am on Iglesias.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Rossy Iglesias?
Yeah, the stuff is great. The strikeouts are well over 30%. I have concerns about that walk rate, which is well in the double digits, and that's too high. He's got the strikeouts to get away with it, but he's not going to sustain his kind of current ERA or anything close to it with that many walks. Now, I do think he's a guy who maybe just has these outings where he loses the control altogether, because he's had 2-3 walk outings over the last month, and that's inflated the walk rate quite a lot. So I think maybe he's just one of these players who has the days when things get away from him, and he's going to have maybe a blow-up outing or two that inflates that ERA down the line. But I think in terms of the stuff, you can't really argue with it. He looks like a top-tier closer. And while I think probably sabermetrically the way he was being used over the first month or so was more sensible, in terms of fantasy players, we're much more pleased with him getting the standard one inning in the ninth and getting the saves. So it's good for us, I think, if not in sort of logical sabermetric terms. So I just worry a little bit about the walk rate, and I think if you've got the opportunity maybe to get somebody to buy him as a top tier closer, I might try and do that, because unless he improves that control, I don't think he is that. But other than that, I think, yeah, you've got to be pretty pleased with Iglesias now that he's more or less established as the full-time closer.
Yeah, I mean, they've pretty much gone away from the multi-inning role, even with the save, even though he was getting the saves then too. The last time he pitched more than one inning in a game was May 9th. The only thing I kind of disagree a little bit is I feel like he was, when he was going two innings and, you know, or inning and two thirds and things like that, he was almost, you know, I mean, we've talked about how a valuable a guy like Andrew Miller has been, a guy like Chris Davinsky has been, because they kind of rack up strikeouts going the extra inning. And he was doing that in this role and getting the saves. So he was even more valuable, and that's kind of lost. Where he's still, of course, he's getting strikeouts and still doing fairly well, you know, as the closer. But, you know, you just got that kind of extra added value of the fantastic ratios and the added strikeouts because he was going, you know, twice what, typically a closer did. And they were still... I guess they're using him a little bit more often, so they're not giving him his.
I think the flip side of that is you probably are going to get a few less saves over the course of the season because they won't use him back to back if they're going to let him throw two innings.
But I mean, at the end of the day, the Reds have 15 total team saves. Iglesias has 12 of them. He's I think he is working his way up into an elite tier. Though I think it's a very interesting point that Chuck made in terms of the team isn't very good and the pitching staff around him isn't very good, and so that may limit his kind of upward mobility in terms of how many saves he can get. But I feel like he's the only one in that bullpen that will – I don't think his job is in jeopardy. I think he could blow a few saves in a row and not have to worry about them throwing in, you know, God knows who – you know, is still in that bullpen. You know, they're not going to throw Drew Storen into the role or Tony Cingrani into the role if he struggles for a week or so. So I like the stability there. You may not get the huge save totals because the Reds probably aren't going to win a ton of games, but it's going to be much more stable than maybe some other situations are. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Mark Reynolds, who's putting together a career year at age 33, almost 34. Darius, what are your thoughts on Mark Reynolds' season so far and then moving forward?
Well, I kind of thought last year that Reynolds might be kind of a decent value being in cords and being a guy who's always shown power. You'd have thought that would help him, and it never really came around. And kind of underneath, he was actually making changes that I didn't really notice at the time, but he struck out a lot less. And he's kind of carried that over into this season and then brought the power back, which is obviously an ideal combo. There's still a lot of swing and miss here, but I think he's taking more looking strikes than swinging strikes now. And he's obviously still good at taking a walk and getting on base anyway. So I think as long as he's in Colorado, it's going to help him a lot. I think of a guy like Michael Kadiah, who had some pretty useful seasons there with really high batting averages. And, you know, you might have not thought he was going to do it in his mid-30s, but we know how good a Parker is. And I think Reynolds is a talented enough player, and he's made good enough improvements in terms of his discipline that while we might not expect this current line to keep up, I think he's going to be fairly valuable fantasy as long as he stays in that park. So, yeah, I kind of like Reynolds going forward. I'm not sure that you'll be able to get him on the cheap anymore, but in the off chance that anybody thinks this is a total mirage, I don't think it is. I think this is a guy with power and good plate discipline who can probably give you 15, 20 more homers down the stretch.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Mark Reynolds? Are you buying this?
I think you have to. Oddly enough, this is a better version of the 2007 Mark Reynolds guy that became a first-round pick the following year in fantasy drafts. You know, his walks are up and his strikeouts are down. He's hitting more ground balls, which I find odd, 3.7% more ground balls. And his pull percentage is up 6.6%. And those are the only real differences that you see. I mean, I thought his pitches per plate appearance were going to be up, and they're not. That's identical for the last 3 years. So he is just managing to swing at better pitches. And, you know, his on-base percentage is great. He is getting good fortune as far as being able to stay in the lineup, because there's just enough injuries between Desmond and between David Dahl and, you know, poor performances by Cargo for a stretch. And, you know, enough is happening that it's pretty easy for him to keep getting at-bats, even as a right-handed batter who generally would only see time against lefties. So things are really going his way right now. I like Mark Reynolds a lot for the rest of the season, and I'm kind of enjoying it. It's a renaissance for a guy who's floated around but has always seemed to be scuffling, and he's not scuffling right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was on board with Darius last season, and even took him in the Dynasty League Dynasty League draft that he and I had. Darius and I have together last year, and rostered him a good portion of the year, waiting for the little Coors bump to really take effect. And what I mean, and it did. It just, he never got the playing time to really show the real improvements that he made. But to Darius's credit, and something I talked about on the Fantasy Insiders podcast, over the weekend, is that he has made steady improvements to his strikeout rate over the course of the last four seasons. This isn't something that is just popping up this year. He has slowly made improvements to kind of become a little bit of a different hitter without sacrificing much power, and it's showing. And right now he is, on pace to smash virtually all of his numbers from his very, very long career. I mean, like I said at the beginning, he's going to be 34 years old in a little over a month. And he's having statistically pretty much his best season ever. Except for probably 2009, when he was able to chip in 24 stolen bases in Arizona. So I believe it. I believe this is legitimate. And Chuck just mentioned, he's got playing time because there's so many people injured. David Dahl's had a setback. There's no timetable for his recovery. There was an announcement yesterday that I wrote up in the Roto write-up over on FanGraphs this morning that Parras had a setback. So, and Bud Black, aside from managing the bullpen and the rotation very fantastically this season, he's also managed Mark Reynolds very fantastically this year. He's been struggling against lefties. He hasn't overexposed him yet. Really, really working people in and out of the lineup in good spots and taking advantage of things. I know he struggled a little bit as of late. His strikeout rate in June is up considerably, but that's also probably has a lot to do with the fact that the Rockies have only played two home games in the month of June so far. So if maybe someone is seeing that and trying to get out from under him, I would be willing to buy, and I don't think that the price right now is exorbitant.
if memory serves me correctly, he has more RBIs than he had last year already. So that's pretty amazing.
Almost.
Oh, it's.
Oh no, no. Actually, you're right. He just passed him. Sorry.
That's pretty amazing, if you ask me.
Yeah, he had 53 RBIs last season, and he has 54 now. Got more home runs than he had last season. He's improved his walk rate by 2% this year. Cut his strikeout rate by almost a full percent. He's cut his strikeout rate by almost 4% since 2014. So, I mean, we're talking, by almost 6% since 2013. So we're talking about some real gains in approach and things. These are legitimate changes, and I think player or fantasy owners sometimes they tend to discount kind of changes that happen in 30-year-olds. They just assume that eventually they're going to go back to who they were, and while that's fair a lot of the time, this isn't just a huge change all of a sudden. This is something that's been evolving over the last couple seasons. So I would say it probably has a better chance to stick. Rest of the season, Mark Reynolds or Justin Smoak?
I'll take Reynolds just because Smoak's burned us so many times before.
Wow, that's really tough. I think I'll still take Smoak, but I like them both a great deal.
Yeah, not that Toronto's a bad place to hit at all, but I'll take the better park in Colorado, the better lineup. I think I'm gonna take Reynolds. Would you take Reynolds or another Justin Bour?
With Bour hurt, I think you got to take Reynolds.
Bour's supposed to be back on Friday.
Oh, well. I'll still take Reynolds just because I think they're kind of similar players in a way, even though they bat from different sides of the plate, etc. But the point being is that they're power-oriented players, and I think there's a longer track record of Reynolds being useful for power.
Yeah, I take Reynolds. I think there's still some platoon questions to be answered with Bour, and I think the batting average is going to be a lot higher as well just from a result of Coors Field and nothing else.
All right, last one. Yonder, Alonso, or Mark Reynolds?
You mean the leader in all-star voting at first base, Yonder Alonso?
Is he really?
He is really, yeah. Ahead of Miggy now.
You know what? That's how it should be, but it still makes me a little bit sick.
Yeah, he deserves it.
No, that's what I mean. He totally deserves it, and that's how fans should vote. But at the same time, I don't want to watch Yonder Alonso in the All-Star game.
I think I believe in Alonso's approach more, but I just think the context is so much better for Reynolds. The A's are pretty bad. Reynolds could easily have double digits more runs than RBI just from being in a better lineup. So I'll say I believe in Alonso more in terms of talent, but I'll still go with Reynolds.
It's razor close for me. I think I would probably take Alonso, especially in anything that had any sort of keeper potential or, you know, dynasty involved, because their careers are kind of the opposites, meaning that Alonso had all the hype as a prospect, and then he laid big thuds after big thuds after big thuds, and now all of a sudden he's good.
But Reynolds, Alonso was never supposed to be like a 30 home run guy.
Yeah, but he was supposed to be a really good hitter.
He was supposed to be like a 320 hitter with like 15 home runs, which back in the days that he was coming up was going to be really, really nice.
Yeah, I think maybe people thought over time he was going to develop power. So the whole stretch where he was going to be a good hitter that didn't have much power, but, you know, the power kind of percolated over time, that didn't happen, and now he just jumped to the guy who all of a sudden has plenty of power, and it looks like he's going to hit for a decent average. I do believe in Alonso more than at least Alonso's coming from a base where, you know, he had pretty good plate discipline a lot of the time and plate coverage, so and he had the better pedigree, as far as I remember it, than Reynolds did. So I'll go with Alonso.
I mean, I don't think that's true, actually. I think he's just younger. So, I mean, you know, Reynolds' pedigree was a lot longer ago. I'm gonna go Reynolds because while I believe in the power that Alonso is showing, I think what we saw with Ryan Schimpf being set down to the minors is that these extreme launch angle changes and maneuvers can have a pretty disastrous downside in other areas of your game. And I think that at some point, Alonso may go through a point in which he's hitting like 230.
Well, I would say the only thing that I'm factoring into it that I don't really hear from you guys is that you said that Reynolds is trending, you know, a little bit worse than he had been. And if he were to have a disastrous month and people were to get back healthy, I think it's possible that he could run into problems getting playing time, which Yonder Alonso has already proven that he could be one of the worst players in the history of Major League Baseball and still get at bats, because that's the way it works in Oakland right now. And so, I mean, you know, as far as
you just wanted one more dig on Billy Bean. That's all that was.
No, I do think that's a factor here. I think there's a possibility.
I think it's a fair point, yeah.
No, and I think it's a fair point, too. I just think there's always going to be an opening in Colorado when you have guys like David Dahl who can't stay healthy, when you have guys like Parra who's had a number of injury issues over the course of his career and in Colorado, Cargo who's, you know, always seemingly banged up. You know, I think – and then you have a piece in Desmond who's movable and can play in different areas. So I just think that I think there's always going to be enough at-bats for Reynolds. And I just – for me, I just think the change in approach at some point, it's going to – there's like – I don't understand like how he can hit 310 doing what he's doing. Like I don't believe that to be his true batting average. I think that's coming down. Let's go ahead and move on though, and talk about Lance McCullers, who was placed on the 10-day DL. And this is kind of the one you know part of Lance McCullers that is always scared people. And so I've got to ask you guys, where do you guys rank McCullers for the rest of the season? Start with you, Chuck.
Well, I guess I would have to say that Lance McCullers has got to be considered, you know, easily a top 20 pitcher when he's able to go to the mound, which this most recent setback is a back injury. It's nothing to do with his arm. You know, so it's really like a back tightness thing, and they're just giving him some time off. You know, he didn't pitch a whole lot last year, so he was going to need a break anyway. His whip is down from 1.54 last year to 1.06, which I have to qualify with the fact that maybe a lot of that whip last year came from McCullers being hurt, since he didn't pitch a whole lot. But, you know, his strikeouts are actually down to only 10.5 per nine innings, which is a statement of exactly how dominating he can be. I just think the uncertainty at pitching helps a guy like this because, you know, they've sort of fallen back to the same level of uncertainty and risk that is inherent in a guy like McCullers. So I actually think this has been good for him. And I think the injury might be good for him to just miss a turn now, et cetera, and be there for the more of the stretch in Houston, since I do think there's an innings limit concern coming. So.
And I'm going to jump in front of Darius, even though I usually make myself last, just because I want to echo that point and kind of build upon it. Is I think this is gamesmanship of the 10-day DL. I mean, he seemed totally fine in his last start. Then all of a sudden, the day that they're ready to bring back Joe Musgrove from the DL, he comes down with back tightness. I think this is a guy who was coming up on the amount of innings he pitched last season. You know, he only pitched 89 innings last season. The Astros have a huge lead in the AL West. And, you know, I mean, I think I heard Fangraph's projection for the Astros have them 99% chance of making the playoffs already at this point in the season. And so I think this is a team looking ahead, going, we're going to need McCullers for the playoffs, and we need to figure out ways to limit his innings. And so I think this is total gamesmanship of the DL. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I think he's a top 10 starter as long as he's healthy, and he has been so far this season. And so conservatively, because he does have an injury history, even though I don't believe this one is a true injury, I would put him as a top 15 starter rest of the way. Darius, what are your thoughts?
I was going to say something similar. The thought certainly crossed my mind. I think it's probably something in between. I think we've talked before about how basically every pitcher is just hurt at least a little all of the time. I don't think McCullers is making up that he felt something, but I think if we had a 15-day DL, he wouldn't be on it. So I think the Astros, yes, as you said, are in such a good position now. They can afford to skip one start from him. They've got one eye on the playoffs and his innings total, and they don't want to get there and him having pitched 160, 170 innings already. And then, obviously, they'll be planning to go deep in, and he'll be their number two starter. So I think it's a case of this is a small niggle, and they don't want to make it worse. And they've also thought, well, if this is a way to save him five, six, seven innings off his innings at the end of the season as well, then that's all good. So I think it's probably somewhere in between, but I do think that the 10-day DL has factored into this decision for sure.
All right. Let's talk about Aaron Judge, and this is one of those guys that we had a long kind of conversation about what his value was going forward in the rest of this season and then into next year. And so I want to kind of reignite that conversation, because I think we all had a little bit different opinion, but we all felt fairly strongly. So, Chuck, where would you draft Aaron Judge next season?
Well, I sort of got this topic rolling in the chat by saying that I think he's going to get picked in the top 10 next year if he keeps up at least at 80% of what he's doing right now. But at the same time, not by me. I'm going off the fact that Trey Turner, you know, had that speed carrying tool, and all of a sudden someone took him at number one overall, which I think is silliness. But he got moved up to the top, you know, into the top 10 with that speed and with that youth and being on a really good offense. Well, Aaron Judge is a guy who's got the youth. He doesn't even really hurt you in speed, and he's been great in all of the other categories. You know, could potentially be the American League MVP, certainly the front runner for it right now. And so to me, I think somebody's going to overinflate his value. Where I'm comfortable taking him in the 16 to 20 range next year. But I think he's going to go in the top 10. And that's what really sort of sparked. It was the catalyzer or the catalyst for quite the lengthy debate that I announced that.
Darius, what are your thoughts on this? Where would you take Aaron Judge?
I'm probably a little bit lower at the moment, and this was one of the main things that I wrote about this week. It certainly in relation to somebody like Stanton, who is basically what Judge was before Judge came along in terms of the power, certainly, and they've been having this Statcast back and forth with who can hit the hardest and furthest home runs. And I think Judge has already proven most of the scouts wrong, who said that he had the raw power, but he didn't have the bat-to-ball skills to tap into it in game. I think at this point he's probably already exceeded the expectations of everybody who said that. And now for me, it's a question of, can major league pitchers figure out a way to attack him more effectively? I'm not sure that they know what to do with his strike zone yet, which is obviously massive, but they don't seem to have been able to take advantage of it. His strikeout rate is high, and it has been climbing. And so I wonder if there's going to be a period where he's not making as good contact, or if he's missing altogether on these shots that just keep flying out of the park. The power is absolutely no doubt, right up there with Stanton as the best in baseball. But I just think it's, two and a bit months, and we haven't seen pitchers really have a chance to adjust to him, and we haven't really seen a player like him before. So I think there are questions that need to be answered, and I certainly can take someone like that in the first round, and maybe not in the second either. So I think maybe kind of around that 2-3 turn is where I'm thinking about at the moment. And obviously, if he does this for another month or two, then I will be moving him up. But for me, it's still just a little bit early to jump all in on a guy who many people thought wouldn't be able to make contact to the extent that he is so far.
All right. If you add Zips projections – for the rest of the season into what he has already done this year. They project him to hit a total of 44 home runs, score over 100 runs and 100 RBIs, have 9 stolen bases, and hit .293. That would make him a first rounder, right?
God, I would think so.
I don't think to what you were saying earlier, Chuck, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I would pull the trigger. I think I would probably rank him in the late second, early third round, probably in the area where I ranked Trey Turner this year. But I completely see the argument, because even if he regresses back to like a 260 average, I mean, what he's already put in prior to this season keeps him above 290.
Well, I think the question there is, does he do it again next year? Mm-hmm. Because if he regresses in the second half and then does it for a full season, then he isn't a first rounder anymore.
I mean, but, you know, I mean, isn't he close, though? Because, I mean, if he hits, let's say, you know, a player who hits, you know, 45 home runs, 100 runs scored, 10 stolen bases at a .260 average, isn't that Giancarlo Stanton of a couple years ago? Or isn't that what we were projecting to him when he was going, you know, second, third, fourth overall? We weren't projecting much.
Yeah,
more
probably,
than that.
But so I don't know. Can we still say he's going to hit the same amount of home runs? You know, I don't know that all of that
but
will
then
stay
we're
the same.
We're also not projecting him to be the top of the first round. We're projecting maybe 15th.
I would also like to mention that this discussion there's two things I really appreciate the concept of comparing him to Stanton, but there's two things that don't jive with me. Number one is there was always questions about the batting average to me about Stanton. Always.
But that's why I'm saying, like, you know.
And to me, I don't know, with a guy who, you know, had his cup of coffee and now he's, you know, a top 10 guy in the American League in batting average kind of guy, you know, which I know it's BABIP driven, et cetera, and so forth. But, I mean, I have a lot of questions. I don't think Giancarlo Stanton was ever going to hit, you know, .330 for a lengthy stretch of the season. And the other thing that I really want to point out is that Stanton has always played in a bad environment mm-hmm. for power, and he's played on a bad team in the National League, you know, the American League East and Yankee Stadium, and all these other factors seem to strongly lean towards Judge here, in my opinion, at the same point in their career, even though I've been a big Stanton fan for a lot of his career. I like him more than most. I think
what Stanton had in his favor is what Darius was alluding to, was, you know, 5 years ago, power wasn't as plentiful.
I do see that, but I also want to point out one more thing that, you know, we've been thinking about this a lot, and this is going to end up in my column somewhat this week as well, that when I ask people where they have him judged, they say, oh, well, he's a top 10 outfielder, okay? Well,
I can come up
with 4 outfielders that I could put in front of him right now, okay? And I think you could find people wrongfully who would take him in front of Blackman. I would not. But you could find people who would, okay?
Trout,
but
Harper, Blackman, Mookie Betts.
So to me, then, if you're going to say he's a top 10 outfielder, right, then you have to come up with 4 more guys that you're going to put in front of him. Are you, you know, and we can play the game that you played earlier. Are you willing to take Nelson Cruz in front of Judge next year with the information we have right now? I don't see that. I don't see George Springer in front of him. I don't see.
I'm taking Cruz in front of him.
Oh boy, with him being dinged up some, you got to remember that you're giving up a category with Cruz. You know Cruz isn't going to run at all.
But I mean, I'm not going to project Aaron Judge to have a batting average above .270 next year.
I think his
true batting average is like .265.
I understand the concept of regression, but I also believe that when a player is 24 years old and is seemingly still on his way up, there is also a theory of progression.
Sure. And I think he could legitimately hit 50 home runs.
And you got to – when I'm looking at a guy like Cruz, I'm saying to myself, I like the player. I like what he's done, okay? Everything about him, okay? But he's also on the other end. You're talking about a guy who's almost 40 versus a guy who's not 25.
Okay. But, I mean, I think and I agree with that, and I think that adds risk. But if I was to give you a if I was to ask you to give me a percentage chance that next season that Nelson Cruz does not return value, you'd probably say 25%, right? Given his age, his injury history.
I'd probably say closer to 40, just because and it's not really his fault. I just don't think the outfield is deep enough to push him down enough where I don't see quite a bit of risk.
Okay. Because, I mean, I would say, considering where Aaron Judge is going to go, there's more than a 50% chance that he does not return value.
I think it is more like a Trey Turner situation in one way, though. Okay. I think if he manages to stay hitting cleanup, okay, and hits at least 35 home runs in Yankee Stadium, he's got a carrying tool that's going to be that he's not going to kill you. Like, there's some security in the fact that he should. I mean, I think we're underestimating how many RBIs he might have. I think Zips is underestimating it as well.
And I agree, because, I mean, projection systems are typically rule on the conservative side anyways. Yeah.
So, I mean, next year, I mean, I don't think it's out of the question next year that he has 130 RBIs.
I think that he is going to be the ultimate risk-reward player. I think he has an extremely high ceiling, and I think we're talking about a guy that legitimately could hit 50 to 60 home runs. Legitimately. I mean, I believe he has that kind of power, and I believe he's got a very, very good batting eye. And when he's making, contact, he's going to have, times like he's having right now. But I also think that there's a little bit of Kyle Blanks in him because of his size.
Well, that could be, but I think he is what everyone hoped or wanted Eric Thames to be.
Yes.
Is kind of what he is right now, is what he's looking like. He had the start of Eric Thames.
A much better looking man.
Boy, I thought you liked beards.
Darius, jump in on this. Be a tiebreaker.
Well, I mean, the thing I would say is I'm not saying that Judge has been lucky or anything. He has been crushing the ball. And my concern is simply that we've not really seen a guy like this. I mean, Blanks is probably the closest guy in terms of size. He didn't have Judge's power. I think Judge has made some really nice adjustments to make more contact on the ball. He's keeping his bat in the zone longer. But we haven't seen a very large sample of him. He really struggled when he came up last year. And he is still striking out a lot. And I just think there is something there that, if we have 15, 20 hitters who hit 40 home runs next year and Judge comes out and hits 250 and hits 40, 41 home runs, are we going to be that excited? Probably not. So that's all I'm saying with Judge is that there are possible adjustments to be made. He might not make them straight away, and he does still strike out a lot. So there is some risk here that I think people aren't necessarily acknowledging. Not necessarily you guys, but I think people who are getting excited about taking him in the first round might not be seeing.
I think he is a more I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way. I think he is going to end up being one of those. He's like Chris Davis, Orioles Chris Davis with a C, kind of on drugs, like I don't know how else to explain it. Like, he's got, I think, more potential for upside than Chris Davis has, but in the same vein and the same kind of downside, but not quite as bad. I could definitely see him hitting 240 in 45 home runs, and I think that is kind of like a situation in which it's great and you're going to be happy you banked that those power numbers, but you're also not going to be happy if you spent a first or second round pick on him.
Well, I mean, within a draft theory concept, my point about the outfield depth in general is that people want to say, he's no better than the fifth outfielder off the board next year. Well, you have to draft a ton of outfielders in a big league So you need an anchor within the outfield. Generally, somebody mm-hmm. is thinking, boy, I'd like to get a little bit ahead in the outfield because Lord only knows what my fourth and fifth outfielder are going to look like. So if you take him as the fifth outfielder off the board, which could still be early in the second round, right? I mean, Blackman went at the end of the first round in a lot of NFBC leagues this year. Okay, so it could still be early in the second round. If you take him there and you're very comfortable that he's going to at least give you top 8 or 9 outfielder value in worst case scenario, then to me, that mitigates the risk. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like that was the deal with Trey Turner. Like you could take Trey Turner and you had the positional eligibility and he was probably going to steal at least 45 or 50 bases, which has turned out to be the case. So even though you took Trey Turner too early, Trey Turner is not killing you because he's giving you something that is very hard to come by in other areas.
But I think the difference is the thing he's giving you is speed. And speed is so much more premium. That's why it's so safe. Whereas, I mean, if all Judge gives you is power, you can get that other places. You could have got, you know, if he does hit 240 and 40 home runs, isn't that Chris Davis with a K?
I do see that, but I think we're seeing... You're seeing a lot more batting average upside we've ever thought Chris Davis with a K has.
Well, sure, and that's what I mean. But I'm talking about the downside. I mean, I think here's what it's going to end up coming down to: it's how risk averse are you? And I think you know you showed I think a little bit of your colors in this season drafting Trey Turner, drafting Thames. And I wasn't willing to pull the trigger on him. And so I think Judge is going to be one of those guys that it makes sense for someone like you who's willing to take the risk early on. But for someone like me who wants a little bit more safety, I'm probably not going to be willing to pull the trigger that early on him.
And like I said, I mean, I think he's going to go earlier than I'm comfortable taking him.
Well, no, and Trey Turner went earlier than... in some drafts, then I think any of us would have felt comfortable taking him.
And that's that some people are daredevils in drafts, thinking mm-hmm. to themselves, they want everything. They want to try and hit on everything to have a magical season. And they want, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They go in thinking to themselves, well, the first person out of the money finishes the same as the guy who finishes dead last. Exactly. So let's take as many huge upside guys as we can. Whereas we enjoy the whole stretch of the game. So we're saying to ourselves, well, you know, let's be as competitive as we can be.
Yeah. All right. Let's do our weekly update on Robbie Ray. And so
that's got to start with Darius.
Yeah, it's the Robbie Ray minute. And I wanted to talk about Robbie Ray because I did my Roto write up the other day. I'm gonna see if I can find it. And it was after his most recent start. And I was trying to kind of poke holes in Robbie Ray while I'm writing this. Because I came in with this preconceived notion that I was going to kind of shit on Robbie Ray. And I walked away from writing it and doing my research and then writing that blurb feeling like, holy shit, I'm a bigger Robbie Ray fan. So, Darius, tell me, do you think Robbie Ray is a top 10 starter rest of the way?
We're getting there. I think this was something else I found myself in the strange position of having to tell everybody to calm down about Robbie Ray, which was a first to me after I spent the last 6 months telling everyone to get excited about him. But yeah, I think, you know, the last 5-6 starts, he has been a top 10 pitcher. He probably has been pitching like a top 5 pitcher based on those starts. The changes he's made are great. The sinker has just gone altogether now. He's brought in the curveball instead. He used that 41 times in his last start when he got the 12 strikeouts against the Brewers. If you want to look for something that says he's not going to get there yet, he did still walk 4, and 12 strikeouts and 4 walks kind of sounds a bit more like Ray of last season, where you kind of you knew you were getting the strikeouts, but those guys on base sometimes are going to kill him, especially if he's giving up the home runs, which he also hasn't been doing. So I think there's a good chance that he is getting there, but top 10 is still a little bit too rich for me. All I can say is that he's done everything that I wanted him to do so far, and I haven't got any reason to doubt him. I just need to see a few more starts, and I think I probably need to see him against some better offenses, because a few people have made the point that most of those starts have been against pretty bad teams, and he's destroying bad teams. I brought up the issue that Max Scherzer just feasts on the NL East most of the year, but he destroys them and he gets you amazing fantasy stats, and that's what you want your best pitchers to do. So I think Ray's going to keep facing bad teams, and if he keeps pitching like this against them, then you're going to probably get something close to a number one starter, if not a definite number one.
Well, and here's kind of the counter argument to that, because that was going to be one of my arguments, is that Robbie Ray, in the five-game stretch that he's had where he's been just absolutely unhittable and striking out the world, he's played the Padres twice, he's played the Brewers twice, and he's played Pittsburgh, and he's and he played Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. I wanted to use that as, oh, he's beating up on the same crappy teams, and he's not going to be able to necessarily do this all year. But then I went and looked at how the National League West's other teams handled left-handed pitching. And they were all in the top seven in strikeouts against left-handed pitching. They all suck against left-handed pitching. The Giants suck against left-handed pitching. The Dodgers suck against left-handed pitching. The Padres suck against left-handed pitching. And the Rockies aren't good against left-handed pitching. So it's like, Robbie Ray's a left-hander. So, these are the teams he's going to face. And, it's kind of just like Max Scherzer getting to dominate against the National League East. The National League West isn't good against lefties. And so that works to his benefit. I don't know if I'm ready to call him a top 10 starter, but I think I'm putting him in the McCullers area. I think he is probably top 15 to 20 rest of the way. Chuck, what are your thoughts?
It's going to echo the conversation that we just had, because I think that's too low. and again, here's why. Okay, after you get past Kluber, after you get past those top four starters, right? Then all of a sudden you're in this Arrieta, Lester coming off a down year. You're in this sort of zone where you're like, you're not really excited to draft anybody that's there. And so to me, when you take a guy coming off a good year who's, to this point, and knock on wood, I hope it happens, he's never been hurt, right? So you say to yourself, well, if I'm going to take a risk anyway, shouldn't I? I might as well shoot the moon. And to me, taking guys like Greinke and stuff like that over a guy like this is cutting your losses. I don't even understand the concept.
Greinke's been better. Greinke doesn't have a history of health issues other than mental health issues, really. And Greinke has a longer track record. So why would you take Greinke over – or why would you take Ray over Greinke?
I would take Ray over Greinke because – a good strikeout year for Greinke is about a K per inning. Ray has a lot more upside than that. And just 2 years ago, Greinke was terrible.
Well, last year, Greinke was terrible.
That's what I mean.
Last year, Robbie Ray was terrible.
Yes.
So,
His performance arc is starting up. And maybe Greinke's not the right guy, because you're right. Greinke has been durable. So I see that part of it. But when I'm looking at him versus
you're talking
guys
like Steven Strasburg.
Yeah, Strasburg, Carrasco. If Robbie Ray performs at a relatively high level the rest of the year, you're thinking to yourself, boy, he's progressing a lot, And you take that first part of the year, the learning part of the year, sort of when he started getting into this groove, off of those stats, and he's going to look like a ridiculously good pitcher. And it's not that I don't appreciate that you guys are, being semi-conservative about it. I do. I'm saying to myself, look, you got burned by everybody from Madison Bumgarner to Kevin Gausman this year.
Oh, trust me, I got super burned by Kevin. I'm still getting burned by Kevin Gausman.
So if you're gonna take a risk, the risk might as well include ridiculous upside. I guess that's what my statement is. And that's what my statement is on Aaron Judge, too, by and large. Aaron Judge versus, Cespedes. Well, If power doesn't matter that much for Judge, just power, it doesn't matter that much for just Cespedes. So to me, you might as well shoot the moon. And, you know, I'm seeing the same thing with Robbie Ray. Now, I don't have any problem. If somebody next year took Robbie Ray as about the 10th or the 11th pitcher off the board, I would not blame them for doing it. I don't think I'm willing to do it. I'm probably willing to do it at 15, though, and there's probably a lot of people not willing to do that. If he keeps up at even 80% of what he's doing right now, you have to like the progression and you have to love the upside. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Robbie Ray versus let's do some Would You Rathers. Obviously, we're taking Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale. Is Kluber or Robbie Ray? Taking Kluber, right?
Kluber.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to – Zach Greinke. I'm going to take Greinke.
I'll take Ray.
Wow.
I'm like right there in the I think, you know, if Chuck's right and he keeps doing this to any real extent, I probably am going to take Ray because I think the strikeouts are much more real and he's going to keep it up. But right now I'll still take Greinke.
Robbie Ray or Carlos Martinez?
Well, to me, those two guys they're both kind of at the proving point, okay? If Carlos Martinez keeps pitching like he has been pitching and Ray keeps pitching how he's been pitching, I will take Martinez. But Martinez has never put together like a 200-inning kind of year yet, and he's kind of always been a little up and down. So I need to see a little bit more from Martinez, but I need to see a little bit more from Ray too.
I love how you keep saying the same – or you keep saying negative points about players that apply to Robbie Ray. Because Robbie Ray has not had a 200-plus inning season.
Yeah, I understand that. But Robbie Ray's in his second full season as a starter. Carlos Martinez has been used off and on for the last 3 or 4 years.
This is like his second full season as a starter as well. Because remember, he was in the bullpen.
Yeah, well... It's more of a coming of age kind of thing for both of those guys.
Sorry, this is his third, and he had 195 innings last year, so much closer.
I would take Carlos Martinez as of right now, but I'm a big Carlos Martinez guy.
I am too.
Yeah, I think I go with Martinez. I mean, he's got strikeout upside too, and he also has some walk concerns, but he also pitches in the NL, and he's got a better park than Ray does. So I would still take Martinez.
You Darvish.
I think I'd take Ray there.
Darvish, I own Darvish, and he's just been – seems like he's so inefficient, and maybe it's just because he takes so long on the mound. Like, he takes so long between pitches. It's exhausting to watch him pitch. I still like the NL a lot better than the AL. So
I do, too. I just think the Rangers are going to ride him in a contract year. They're just going to ride him until the wheels fall off.
When do the wheels fall off?
I think they're hoping, and fantasy owners are hoping next year.
I would still take. Actually, I'll still take Darvish.
I'm going to take Darvish as well. And this is where it starts to become difficult because you guys, Chuck, you already said you're taking him over Carrasco and Strasburg. Darius, are you taking Robbie Ray over Strasburg and Carrasco?
Over Carrasco, I think yes. Strasburg is close because he is a guy for me. You know, I think he can be a top three guy if he ever actually pitches a full sort of 210, 220 inning season. But I'm not there yet. I think I'd still take Strasburg, but it's getting much closer than I thought it would ever be.
Yeah, I'm taking both of them. Interesting name, Luis Severino.
I think similar thing. I've been impressed by what I've seen, but I still need to see a lot more. And I liked Ray more coming in, so I'm going to take Ray.
I think that this tiebreaker comes down to having to pitch at Yankee Stadium.
National League and American
League. And in
the
AL East. Yeah. That's what I think it comes down to. But Severino's a guy we haven't spent a whole lot of time on, and he is climbing at a rate that's not as much as Ray, but it's pretty fast too.
He was my boy. He's been my boy for a long time. So I'm glad to see it actually happening. Let's see. I want to do just a couple more. I'm not going to say Jason Vargas or Irvin Santana, so they can. Lance McCullers. We talked about him earlier in the episode. Would you take Lance McCullers or Robbie Ray?
It's Robbie Ray for me. And I like McCullers a lot when he pitches, but this is getting to be a pretty lengthy history of injury issues.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm willing to slap the injury tag on McCullers, because we do think this is probably a little bit of gamesmanship, but I think you can't expect him to get 200 plus innings anytime soon, and I think we're kind of already there with Ray. He's shown to be durable so far, and I think he's going to be a real workhorse going forward. So yeah, I think I would go Ray just for that reason, but that one's probably gonna be real close for me next year in the rankings.
Yeah, I'm taking McCullers, but it's close. Alex Wood.
I just can't trust Wood. He looks amazing when he pitches, but he's Rich Hill.
I really don't. But I don't think that's all that close.
He's Rich Hill, but he pitches.
Well, I mean, sometimes. I mean, he's already been on the DL again this year.
Well, again, but don't you think that was gamesmanship again? This is
no,
the
I don't think so. They sent him back for more tests that he didn't.
Oh,
stay
that's
on
right. You're
tests.
Right. You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm not. I mean, I like what I've gotten from Alex Wood as a late round.
Yeah,
gamble.
I'm not taking Alex Wood either. So I just throwing him out there. Well, I think there you have it. Because I mean, I could probably throw Lester, Cueto, DeGrom. You taking any of those guys?
I think I would rather, if things continue how they're going right now, I would take Ray over Cueto.
But I'm not over Lester.
I'm not a Cueto guy. I want to see Lester finish strong. I was expecting a bit of a post World Series drag on the Cubs, and we've gotten it. And I think next year they could be back, and so I'll still give a slight edge to Lester.
Because I'll take Cueto. I'll take Lester. I'm really unsure about DeGrom. I think DeGrom, Chris Archer and DeGrom.
I would rather have Ray than Archer for sure, just because of Archer's sort of up and down nature over the last couple of years. But DeGrom is one for me that when DeGrom is completely healthy, I think he's really close to the top 6-7 kind of guy when he's healthy. So if he's healthy for most of this year, I will stick with DeGrom over Ray.
Darius?
Yeah, I think I haven't seen a reason why DeGrom has been struggling. You know, people have speculated that he's hurt, and I think it's just maybe a bit of bad luck, and you know, his strikeouts are still great. So,
and he was great in his last start.
Yeah, and his track record is much longer, obviously. So I still go DeGrom for now, unless we see something the rest of the way that changes that. But at the moment, it's still DeGrom for me.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. We spent our 5 minutes on Robbie Ray, and that should do it for it. Darius, why don't you tell people where you've reached and what you're working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I had a little piece up on the site just looking at some rest of season projections and kind of reminding everybody that projections are still a better indicator of what will happen going forward than in-season performance. So it's just kind of a good time to sort of take a deep breath and maybe sort of calm down a little bit about certain players and look back at what we thought of them pre-season and what the projections think the rest of the way, rather than just assuming they're going to keep doing what they're doing. And I also have a piece up at Banished to the Pen today about stolen bases and whether players get better sort of the longer they're in the league. So do they learn more from sort of getting experience of the majors, and do they have a higher success rate? So go over and check that out.
Chuck, where can you be reached? What are you working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, and I am working on my weekly piece, which I was partially waiting for the end of this conversation to finish up. And I will be talking about when I'm willing to take young players over veterans, what I want to be seeing out of the veterans. And my example of a veteran that I'm very high on because of his repeat performance is Daniel Murphy, a guy that I'm sure we'll talk about moving forward.
He almost made this list.
I believe he did. And he's still raking, but, and he had another home run just to try and tease you into thinking he's going to hit for power yet. But that's the stuff I'm working on.
I hope he does. I hope he hits 40 home runs. I have a lot of shares of Daniel Murphy.
That's because I think he's a great draft value. I really do.
You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff over on FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week, or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, where I write wherever, whenever I feel like it. You can also hear me on the radio Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm going to be doing a guest spot on SiriusXM this weekend at probably about 6:30 Eastern. The Rotorballer crew is going to have me on there doing a guest spot. I just did a guest spot on the Fantasy Insider show. I've got a couple other guest spots coming up on Fantrax's new video podcast, and then I think I'm going to be on Dear Mr. Fantasy at some point in July. So lots of different ways you can hear, read my content, and hopefully that is it. So that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Darius, Chuck, myself, thank you for listening. A fantastic baseball season.